To another episode of the Bobcast. With you as always is Bob, live in the lounge, staring at the Ouija board. So a couple episodes back, I was talking about heading out to Seattle to mourn with others for Kurt's 30th anniversary of his death. And I had like the workings of an Airbnb right there in right near Lake Washington, like where he lived. I probably messed that up, sorry. But, you know, I don't have a computer in front of me in the woods, you know what I'm saying? I had this Airbnb, which was like, you know, $420. Like, it was like, I'd be like in somebody's basement pretty much, but I'd be like right by his house. But then we got hit up with some bills, like literally like that day or the next, where it's just, you know, I got to take care of the family first. And I just made a promise to myself that I'm going to get there. And like, you know, I started thinking about like, I come out here a lot alone, you know, I kind of want to mourn alone too. Like, I don't know how to explain it, but like, I don't want to go as a tourist to see his house for the first time, you know, like, it's just weird, you know, it's a weird thing. It's like, I mean, trust me, if somebody picked me up right now in a helicopter, like in The Walking Dead, and they were like, hey, do you want to go to Seattle? I'd go. I'm not lying. You know, I'm making like excuses up as to why I didn't go. The reason I couldn't go is I couldn't afford it right now, you know? We got hit up with the dental bill, you know, that we didn't expect, that the insurance didn't cover. And it's just how it goes. But I'll get out there. But, you know, today is April the 5th, 2024, and I'm out in the woods. Today is the day that the medical examiner determined that Kurt passed away, but like you and the rest of the world, you found out on April 8th, 1994. It was a Friday. It was the worst way to start a weekend, you know? The absolute worst. And, like, the thing that, you know, it's hard to understand now in today's world where I'm looking at my cell phone and seeing if the voice is being captured correctly with an audio wave that shows me whether or not my voice is too loud or too small or inaudible, you know? But like, there was no way to find out news. And like, April the 8th was a long time since when he was discovered in Rome, you know? The news reported that he had, you know, slipped into a coma and they were like, you know, working on him, but he was alive. Later we found out that he, you know, had ingested those roofies or rehifenol or whatever it's called. And the thing about it is that, you know, there's more, maybe 30 or 60 in them. And in order to, you know, do that, you had to individually unwrap each one. So there's no question right there that, you know, he did want to take his life. And, you know, I'm 14. How old were you? You know, I mean, like various different people have various different recollections of what it was like to experience that weekend. But for a 14-year-old boy who had pretty much just entered, I was late into puberty. I wasn't like some of these cats who had like full beards by the time we were 14. I'm looking at you, Kevin Quinn. I never forget when Kevin came to our school, he came in the middle school and he had a full beard. As a matter of fact, he had a beard similar to like what mine looks like now at the age of 44. It's a long time, you know, to not know if this guy was okay. And like, the other thing too was like, I didn't do drugs or alcohol back then. And I remember hearing about Kurt doing heroin, and like, I had associated heroin with nothing because I had no reference point for it, you know? And like, I'm like, what? He's putting needles in himself. It's very hard to understand too. Like, look, think about this now from a standpoint of like a young, impressionable young man or boy, excuse me. The thing that, look, when you're a boy, not all men have this. I'm not going to, you know, paraphrase this all into one thing, but you have like a hero, you have some sort of male hero that you look up to other than your dad or people in your, you know, immediate life. You have somebody on your wall, like a poster or something that, you know, you like. And that would be Kurt Cobain from Nirvana for me, you know? And I didn't want the guy who's the poster on my wall to be taking drugs. I didn't want the guy, the poster on my wall, to be a part of, like, the terrible things that Vanity Fair said in, what, 1992 about him and his wife doing heroin while she was pregnant with their kid, doing heroin with the kid in the house, you know. Tragic. Fast forward to years later when a film comes out called Montage of Heck, and you see him on the rooftop high on heroin, and he's about to go inside and he's about to cut or attempt to hold his child while Frances gets her first haircut. And I'll never forget that, man. I'll never forget watching that, and just, I was angry at Kurt, you know, because I've been addicted to substances before and I know how dark it can go. But, you know, I never knew how bad he was, because, you know, the thing is, like I said, back then, no Instagram, no internet, no nothing to get you, like, plugged into the whole social media pipeline. You didn't have any way of knowing if he was okay. And that was terrifying. Terrifying. Terrifying for a 14-year-old boy who stares at the man on the poster on his walls and just prays. Just, please, God, don't let Kurt die. So, you know, I remember like the first time it happened, you know, back in March. And, like, I remember getting picked up by my buddy's mom. And she was a sweet, sweet woman. Her name was Mary. And she passed away from cancer years later. But she had also been going through something similar when Jerry Garcia passed away. I think it was, like, right around that time. And she knew, like, what we were going through. You know, but the first time she picked us up, and that was when we thought he was dead, you know, for a whole car ride, you know, a whole car ride to the water ice place, because we went there on Fridays to get the buddy's water ice in Norristown with my friend Topher. And, like, you know, it just, I remember I don't remember if I ate the water ice, you know, I just remember just being so out of it, you know, like, didn't want to, like, make eye contact with anybody. And then immediately we get in the car, and WDRE was the radio station at the time, and they had confirmed that Kurt was still alive. And I remember being excited, like you would get excited about, like, you know, like Christmas. It's very confusing, you know. It's like I was excited that he was alive, not for the reasons that the man's, like, you know, his family, his loved ones, everybody was, you know, I was, like, happy that he was alive because he was the man on the poster in my bedroom on the walls, you know? And, like, I'm young. I don't know how to process this stuff, you know what I mean? And, like, I'm also embarrassed at the time that Kurt's art and imagery, like, scared my parents, scared my mom. Like, my dad, I don't think, had much of a say. But I remember once, like, I showed my mom, like, the heart-shaped box video, and, like, there's some Christ imagery in there that, you know, went over everybody's head what Kurt was actually trying to say. Like, some people thought it was offensive. My mom thought it was offensive. My mom also thought it was offensive when I came home with the Nirvana t-shirt with the infamous logo, but the back of the t-shirt made references to crack sniffing whores. My mom had blacked out the whores with, like, some sort of putty that I could never wear, because then the putty gave me, like, a rash through the shirt. Censorship, you know. I just said censorship. Yeah, so he's alive, and then we find out, you know, a couple weeks later he's dead. And, dude, I became depressed at the age of 14, okay? And, like, not depressed, like, you know, oh, I can't, like, go to work today. Like, I stayed in bed in the rug on my floor for 72 hours until I had to go back to school, you know? And there's the, you know, the WDRE is, like, this, like, social media type thing. It's a radio station that all the kids listen to. The radio station was so popular that bands would come and they would do something called WDRE's sessions. One-hour sessions. I forget the name. I remember Jackson's Local Shots, but I can't remember what WDRE called it. But they put out CDs. They had bands come. I remember once there was a recording of Incubus that was just phenomenal, doing one of their hit songs. But WDRE was reporting throughout the weekend. I had MTV and Kurt Loder on the television. It's the first time I ever saw Kurt Loder depressed. It's the first time I ever heard his voice crack, you know. They were playing his music videos all weekend. They must have played Unplugged for like 6-7 hours straight. And, you know, people were, you know, not commenting online, but lots of people, like, you know, later in the years would make reference to the fact that Unplugged, you know, looks a lot like a funeral with, like, you know, his choice of candles and flowers and arrangements. None of the commentary on WDRE, none of the commentary that Kurt Loder, none of it could help me. None of it. Not a bit. He's dead. He's the poster on my wall. And I have to keep going. I have to, I gotta like start becoming a man too. Like puberty is like right, it's happening right when he dies, you know? Like I remember like knowing certain things were changing, you know, right in that month of March leading into April, you know? Like I said, I was like late to the scene. It was a slow process for me. It wasn't overnight like Kevin Quinn and his fabulous beard. But yeah, depression, you know, it's weird because like if you've never been depressed before and then it happens, you're not really sure what's happening to you, if that makes sense, you know? It just hits you quick. Depression washes over you. And I'm just in that room, man. I'm on the bed. I'm on the floor. I'm just listening to WDRE. I spend the better part of 3.5, maybe probably 4 hours waiting on hold with the WDRE hotline so I could get on the air and just say 2 sentences. I believe what I said was, you know, Kurt's music. Kurt may be dead, but his music will live on. And I remember, like, I recorded myself with a cassette tape player. I remember hitting play and record. And I remember being like, first I hated the way my voice sounded. I still don't like the way my voice sounds, but you know what? Whatever. I'm good at it now, you know? But back in the day, man, I didn't like it, you know? And I was so hard on myself, even on the rug there. You know, I remember being like, man, I sound like such a dick. But I still had that tape somewhere, you know? I know I kept it. And it meant a lot to me, you know? Like, that I had got the message out just somewhere, you know, into the world. And I remember thinking, like, on that rug, maybe Kurt heard just a bit of it, you know? Maybe Kurt could feel that presence. Maybe Kurt, you know, could see and feel, like, my pain and realize how much I loved a man that I never even met. The man poster on the wall. I remember my parents took me to the church that weekend, and I did not want to go to church. I remember that distinctive feeling. At the time, we weren't going to St. Cosmos. We were going to another church in country, St. Matthew's, which is a very large congregation as compared to what St. Cosmos would pull in on weekends. And, you know what? That's a good idea. I'm going to go check out St. Cosmos this weekend. I haven't been there in so long. The other night, I did go, and the doors were shut, but I got a chance to look in. Spent so much time in there as a kid just being mad at God and Jesus, but they had nothing to do with it, dude. It was just the circumstances of Catholicism and, you know, the imprint it wants to leave upon you. And I don't want to be scared of God. I want to love God, you know, but I've come to terms and peace with that. So that Sunday, my parents want to go to church, you know, and I remember them wearing... Somehow or another, my mom came home. You know what? I know exactly now. My mom worked at the old hospital in Norristown, the one that became Einstein. It used to be called Montgomery Hospital. And when she was working there, she came out from work and somebody was already selling Kurt Cobain Rest in Peace shirts outside. It was pretty quick with the bootlegs back in the day. Still is, I think. But my mom got it and I wore it to church. The Kurt Cobain picture was someone's like black and white rendering of him. It was like the thing that was on the cover of the Rolling Stone. And, you know, I wore it. And Sunday comes when the priest at the time was, you know, I guess radical for for that time period where he would, you know, ask volunteers to come up in the middle of his sermon, and he wouldn't, you know, he wouldn't really stand in one spot. He was pretty active. I think his name was Father McGann, or I forget. I'm sorry, Father. But he asked for three volunteers, and he was trying to make, it was Easter coming up, and he wanted to like kind of make an example of how, you know, the apostles, you know, followed Jesus, you know, on blind faith. They just trusted in him. They knew that he would be there for them. And he demonstrated this by asking for three volunteers. I was one. I remember getting up, and like, since Kurt was on the back of my shirt, I remember walking, you know, up the aisle past the pews and just like hoping that people could see his shirt and also pray for him. You know, I get up there and it's just such a weird series of events, because the priest says to us, the volunteers, all right, I need you to close your eyes now. And I need you to imagine like what the apostles went through, and like they're blind, you know, just faith. They had faith. They knew that God would be there. A leap of faith, if you will. So he said, close your eyes. Put your arms on your chest, cross them. And on the count of three, I want you to fall backwards. And when he said it, immediately I went into my head to the lithium video, and like how, you know, Kurt would throw himself down on the ground. It was part of like his act, you know, it was like part of his grunge, excuse me, grunge MO. That's right, he had a MO with the grunge. I'm going up a big hill, sorry for my rude, bated breath. But I'm getting pretty good at this, because this is a big hill right here. This is at least 18 floors, maybe. It's right after Bell's Mills if you make a right. And it's a great way to open up them hips. Shake them like battleships. So, you know, it's hard to deal with it, you know. So, like, I get up there and the priest is like, you know, on the count of three, I want you to fall backwards. So, I fall backwards. I think of Kurt. And then I'm certain that I'm going to fall like Kurt on the ground and make a grunge example of myself. But somebody was behind me, a deacon, to catch my fall. I remember he backed up two steps because I wanted to fall like Kurt. But then somebody was there. Somebody was there to help me. And I, over the years, God, I must have gone through so many different scenarios in my head of how I could have helped, or how somebody involved with him could have helped, and how so many opportunities were missed, and all that, you know? It didn't really help because I have OCD, and I'm ADD, and I'm all, you know, these things that they never had terms for. But, yeah, dude, like, I couldn't stop thinking about it, you know? I couldn't stop thinking, like, you know, it's also very strange, to be honest with you, that, like, this all occurs during, like, you know, the Easter season, you know, it's happening right during, like, I think it was Easter week coming up the following, you know. So I got old, you know. I remember I turned 27. I thought, all right, here I am at his age. I'm not even like fully, you're not even fully an adult. Your brain, I didn't find that till later, but like, you know, it's just wild that like, everything he did, I tried to do. I started a band. I traveled the country. I tried to make it big. I hated, loathed, like the sell yourself aspect of being in a band. I'm selling myself on stage. I don't need to do it afterwards. You know, like, I was no good at it back then. I hated it. I'm good at it now in conversation, but like, I did this acting thing a while ago. And it would probably be best for me if I just, like, packed my bag and left, you know? And it's not out of, like, you know, narcissism or any of that. It's like, I really want to live in the moment of the artistic impression, the residue that's left over, you know? Like, I want to be alone with my thoughts so I can process them, you know, and then not have somebody tell me something went wrong or something, you know? Like, I learned that from Kurt. I learned that being in a band, that, you know, being an artist doesn't mean that you got to sell yourself out. You don't have to, you know, be some bitch and just like fall in line with others. You could have a voice very similar, honestly, to Christ. I mean, like, standing up for others, you know, loving others that are not loved, you know, like, he was an advocate, you know, for so many people who never had a voice, you know. And the weird thing was he like meshed like genres of people together, where he couldn't stand the fact that the jocks, the ones who had beat his ass in high school and ridiculed him about being a weird artist, were now showing up to their shows and moshing to the song Breed. Or, you know, there was an instance that you could see on YouTube of some young man trying to grope a woman at Kurt's shows during an acoustic performance, and Kurt slams that acoustic down and goes right into the crowd or to the front of the stage and orders him to be removed. These are all wonderful things, you know? These are all things that I wish that he was still doing around here. I wish he was still making his impression on the world, you know? And the thing about it is, he shook things up so much. I mean, the dude's only around for, what, 2.5 years in the mainstream, right? 2.5 years of Nevermind selling now 30 million copies. At that time, I think they said something like it was selling out so much that they couldn't even keep up with the prints. And like, Nevermind in the beginning was impossible to get. I only had the cassette tape single. But I can only imagine what would have happened if he stayed alive. And, you know, I've come up with so many different scenarios over the years, and time travel is always involved. You know, I've even toyed with the idea of writing a film about it, but you get caught up in all those rights and you can't do it properly. You could allude to it like the film Last Days does, which is directed by Gus Van Sant. If you're a Nirvana fan, I recommend you check it out. But yeah, I miss him, dude. You know, I'm 44 now, and he never went out of style, you know? Regardless, take away all the conspiracy stuff, take away the death, take away the suicide, excuse me, and take away all that, you know? He still made such unique music, such unique art that, in my opinion, never been replicated. There's people who've tried to copy it, of course, along the way, but, like, some of his stuff, especially now as a musician, years later, looking back, it's such a unique style to the guitar, you know? Like, if you know somebody who's a musician, or if you yourself are a musician, guitarist, play the main riff to Heart-Shaped Box, and when you get to the second little part, you'll know, like, he had this like unique ability to hear the music differently. You know how they say that there's, you know, 12 chords, and it's really about the way that the person and their soul sees those chords, and the way that they, you know, take them and then output them back out to the world. Well, Kurt's, oh, almost broke my ankle right there. Not good, folks. Kurt's unique ability to sometimes tell stories and then sometimes mix words together that seemingly didn't make sense to people, but he had this unique vision too, with the style of his music coming alive with art. And this was just stuff that a 14-year-old me never took for granted. I still don't take it for granted. I thought today when I woke up I'd be sad. I thought that I'd be depressed. I've gotten very emotional over the years on this podcast talking about Kurt, and I've gotten very emotional talking about the, you know, the element of fallout that I felt for years. About 2-3 months ago, I decided, you know, one thing I've never got a chance to do, and it's been long overdue, is to write a letter to Chris Novoselic, the bass player, who was Kurt's best friend, who basically, you know, saw that brilliance in Kurt and then magnificently brought it out by his just amazing bass playing and just unique approach towards the bass with the pick and the, you know, strings that sounded like it was like a dirty growl, you know, like almost like a dog ripping through like a field of tall grass. And I always admired the fact that he was outspoken. You know, bass players usually don't say anything, but dude, like the fact that he, how you doing, fellas? The fact that he was able to, go on MTV and like talk about politics, and he later became a politician himself. So once I wrote that letter, hey, how you doing? Good, how are you? What's up, kids? How you doing? All right, so basically, I write him a fan letter, and like most of the stuff I've told you, I told him, and I told it in pen, you know, written out, and I took my time with it. I didn't like rush into it, you know, like I really just wanted to do my best, and then I sent it, you know, I sent it out because I had found his P.O. box online. It's kind of easy to find, and I had read that he enjoyed, you know, fan mail, and then, you know, hey, how are you?
Hi.
Hi, how are you? There was just nothing, you know. I sent it off and no reply back. And, you know, I thought loftily that, you know, maybe he'd see it and, you know, all this and that. And then, like, months pass. And then, like, it's like maybe, what, 3.5 months later. And I'm in the living room playing my bass guitar because I'm getting ready to learn some new... I'm learning new songs for... my performance on Sunday at Storehouse Church, right? And the particular song I'm playing is like, you know, the thing about worship music is, if you've never heard it, one, you're missing out, but it contains this weird element. Even if you're not spiritual, I would really like to take a test and see, do you feel emotion? Regardless of the fact that the songs are about Jesus Christ, do you feel emotion? Because the songs are just packed with it. And I happen to be learning one just like that. When Teresa walked in through the front door with large eyes, like she was scared, happy, and, you know, she had something in her hand and I couldn't see it. And then she flipped it over. And when she flipped it over, I saw it was a postcard from Chris. And he wrote, "Bob, you rock." And then he signed his name. And then he cut out, like, my address. So I know he opened the letter and it wasn't like, you know, like he read it, you know. And it, that, too, just felt just like the WDRE thing. Echoing Kurt's soul out there into the stratosphere so people can remember him for who he truly was, an artist. Not some drug addict who fucked up, you know. And that was the narrative that I listened to for a long time and tried to, you know, essentially run away from. But the truth of the matter is that... he really made me into the man I am today. He made me into, I mean, I copied his whole look. I'm a heavier person. I always went, I remember being a kid, like, I'm never going to get that skinny. But, you know, I've always had long hair and it's just, you know, I feel more comfortable with long hair. I feel more comfortable being someone who stands up for others. I feel more comfortable being someone who is an artist who isn't afraid to compromise their vision. I feel more comfortable talking to you and being vulnerable and allowing myself sometimes to, you know, be real here on this podcast, you know. And I've been in many bands and all of the bands were definitely a testimony, a devotion of truth to Kurt Cobain, dude. I mean, my band Downtown Harvest, like there was a couple times where there's two songs that I played guitar on. So they would call me Bobby the Switchblade, right? And then I'd move over. Tom would play bass. I'd play his guitar. And Tom would always get pissed off because I'd turn my reverb all the way up and I'd turn the distortion a certain way, mimicking Kurt's sound. And there was this song we used to play called Mega Magellan, right? And it was very distorted, fast, pogo-like style, like rock and roll song. And afterwards, sometimes, I would just rip into the poly new wave. Like, it's the fast version of Polly. And Frank would sing it, and we'd just rip it. And then later on, I talked him into... we covered Love Buzz, which was not written by Nirvana. It was actually a cover song of theirs. I can't remember the name of the original band who did that. But I'm sure it was a good one. I've heard it, actually. And then I never thought we'd be able to do it, but we did. Because I remember hearing the song as a kid and just being like, this is just amazing. And that song was Aneurysm. We covered it for 104.5, Live at 5. And I remember thinking to myself, too, even, you know, well, I was like 30 when I did that. Man, this just feels just like the WDRE, Testimony to the Truth of Kurt Cobain. And we ripped that song. Frank and the band played accordion, and later I sent it to Chris Novoselic, and he retweeted me. So he saw that, too, and it just felt good. This feels good. To just say that, thank you, Kurt. I pray for your soul. I pray that somewhere in the next life, that artistry has a space to still tell stories. And I hope that I get to sit and listen. My name's Bob, and this has been another episode of The Bobcast.